So yesterday, day before yesterday, we discussed about the position of three kinds of brahmacharis, that of the naistika, who is lifelong brahmachari, the upakurvana, who will get married but has taken a vow for a specific amount of time to become trained in proper behavior, and the grihastha brahmachari who has already become married. Three positions, these are very important. These are the first stage of the whole varnashram system. Because until one is trained in the principles of the philosophy, then there's no question also of varna. Means both have to be there. Of course, according to nature, there's certain activities you like. You may have to be trained in this way or that way. Someone more academics, more philosophy, different varieties of practical service we may be trained in. But the first thing starts with the ashram of being a student. Because once one is heard, then only one can practice. Until one is heard, until one has tried to understand, then through the realization one gets, then one can practice very nicely. So if one can get all of the, all of the understanding in as a student, and get one's full realization without having to practically experience it for oneself other than by hearing or seeing, then one can remain a student for one's full life. But otherwise, if not, then one naturally moves into the next ashram, into grihastha, and then accordingly one must maintain oneself. This is the economics must be there. So a student means they are menial servants of the teacher, and in this way they are maintained. The grihastha then has to, in some way or another, maintain themselves. So this moves to the next stage. Vanaprastha retires from that. Sannyas means then, again, living by begging. So these mentalities are very important. Yeah. So the conclusion was is on between the naistika and the upakurvana is this point of realization. If one can gain that realization as a brahmachari, means the experience has to be, the knowledge or the philosophy has to be practically realizable and applicable in the life of detachment from material nature. If that comes, then very good. If not, then we have to get that. And we get that by applying it, this knowledge, in our life and trying to see directly how the material energy itself is not what gives us the satisfaction. So then we enter the grihastha ashram and interact more closely with the material nature to understand this. So depending upon our own nature, that degree may be more or less. As we see Sudama Brahmana, Sudama Vipra, he also is a grihastha, but he was not at all worried about economic development. Right? He had no worries about these things. So we see that he was lived very, very simply. So as far as the platform of the facilities and the material enjoyment, means the sensual platform, he did not require. He only required or needed just the platform of the emotional support and exchange between the husband and wife or the family. But facilities were not of great importance for him. Therefore, he could live so simply and so poorly. But if one requires more than that, then one has to take up occupational situation in which one can fulfill more needs. right? The emotional platform remains. That's not going to expand. But just means that we have to expand some more material facilities, like this. Then accordingly, we do that, and then we will see with time that that's not actually the main substance of the grihastha life. We can pull back to that emotional platform. And then from there, we see that the real emotional platform is based on the devotional platform. And we can pull back to the devotional platform. Like this. So that is the natural progress. As a student, the emphasis is on the devotional platform and the emotional platform. As a grihastha, then that emotional platform increases. We may add in the sensual platform. And then with time, as we mature in our understandings and practices, we will see, we come back as vanaprasthas, back into the emotional platform, and with the emphasis again on the devotional platform. So like this, then, the living entity engages the different aspects of attachment in the Lord's service. And then things work very nicely. So this makes the principles of either getting to Krishna through the path of detachment or getting to Krishna through the path of attachment, means material attachment, the pravritti and nivritti. Nivritti means that with very minimal facility and minimal material engagement, then we apply ourselves in devotional life. So that we see specifically those in student life, then generally the vanaprastha and the sannyas, these must be situated in nivritti, have to be. But the grihastha can be in either nivritti or in pravritti, right? Pravritti means grihastha. But the grihastha can also not engage oneself in the pravritti. Main difference comes is the identification. It's all consciousness. We see the Sudama Brahmana is a very good example. He had nothing, and he was detached. He was just interested in serving Krishna, he and his wife. But then, because the wife was feeling, you know, that her husband was suffering so much from the austere life, not for herself, but for, you know, the comfort of the husband, she was thinking, why don't you go to Krishna and ask for something? So he didn't really want to ask, but whatever. She persevered. Krishna mentions in the Gita that, patience and these determination, these things are the feminine qualities. So through these qualities, then the wife was able to convince him that he should go to Dwarka. So then he went. Then after Krishna gave his was pleased to receive him, and Rukmini Devi, Mahalakshmi, gave her blessings, then we find that he had opulence greater than that of Indra. But we see that even in that position, it didn't change his attitude. He lives still as, in his mind, still as simply, not complicated, as he was before when he had nothing. This is, now how does this work? So the main thing is on what you have, whose is it? That is the main consideration. This makes the difference between the pravritti and nivritti. Nivritti thinks, whatever I have, it belongs to Krishna. And it is my responsibility to see that it's nicely engaged in Krishna's service. Right? Pravritti means, whatever I have is mine, and because I'm a devotee, I will engage it in Krishna's service. We see the difference? That sense of ownership on the material platform, right? Even though it's in connection, it's dovetailed in Krishna's service, but that makes a difference between the two. So we can see that the same person, the same grihastha, could be on one or the other, depending upon their consciousness. So the consciousness is the most important element here. So the whole thrust of Daiva Varnashram is nivritti. Nivritti means that everything is Krishna's. Everything is to be engaged in Krishna's service. That is the purpose of the Daiva Varnashram. While the Asuric Varnashram, or ordinary Varnashram, the whole thrust of that is Pravritti. Right? In that you have the shadows or the reflections of the Nivritti and Pravritti Marg in the form of karma and jnana. The karmis are really into enjoying the senses and the facilities, while the jnanis are into renouncing and detaching. But they're both still Pravritti, because one wants to enjoy like God and one wants to be God, like that. So in both cases, there's false identity and a false sense of enjoyment and proprietorship, that it all belongs to me. So, and this is, God doesn't really come into the picture. While in the Daiva Varnashram, which is Nivritti, this means that everything, we have the understanding that it's all, everything, ourselves, everything is to be used in Krishna's service. But within this, we find this fine division between whether we are thinking it's Krishna's, and I am just, it is my duty to take care of it, or it is mine and I am engaging in Krishna's service. Right? Just like the example, we can give an example between the two. I mean, certain situations you can apply, both certain situations you cannot. Just like, let's take a temple. Now, if the temple president thinks, yes, this is my temple, everything in it is mine, there's a problem. But if they understand this is Krishna's temple, Krishna's devotees, Krishna's service, and I am, it is my responsibility to see that it is taken care of and everything is done nicely. Everyone is engaged nicely. You know, the preaching is going on nicely. Deities are taken care of. Devotees are happy, healthy, all this. Then it works nicely. But if the president thinks this is mine, then the problems start. Because then if it's theirs, then the choice is if they want to use it in the service or not. Right? So we see the same thing applies in the household ashram, is that we have it, we have things, but now it's a matter of, are they ours or are they Krishna's? Now, of course, the grihastha knows, because they have made the endeavor to gain these facilities, money or house or whatever it is, then that means that they generally will find that they are quite experienced and they have a value of it, and they know properly how to use it. While a student sometimes, because they don't make money, or this, they may not value it. They may misspend, they may not take care of properly. So qualified person should take care of things, right? That's the aspect of Varnashram. Whatever you're good at, that's what you do. Krishna says, better to do your duty than to someone else's. Right? So you do what is your nature. Now, the grihastha, they make the money, they know how to generate the money, they know how to generate facility, so they also know, should know at least, how to properly take care. So they take care to see that it's properly used in Krishna's service. They may direct the money in certain ways to certain projects or this or that, with the purpose of serving Krishna. They take care of the house so it looks proper for Krishna, Krishna's devotees, use whatever facilities they have as much as possible for preaching, serving devotees, these different aspects. So it's mainly in the consciousness. The other is mine. If I want to use it for Krishna, I can. If I don't want to use it for Krishna, I don't have to, because it's mine. I have that freedom. I have that independence. In other words, the Nivritti means independence is less on the material platform, though spiritually it's greater. And Pravritti means more freedom is there on the material platform, though the spiritual platform is less. Right? So this is very important. So it doesn't matter factually how one situates oneself, as long as one understands that ultimately how we get Krishna's attention and how we get his mercy is if we come to the platform of akinchana gochara. It means we have nothing. Nothing is ours. We may have something, but we know it is not ours. It is Krishna's. Yes. Within Nivriti, it's just like how you'd say. Question is Daiva Varnashram is Nivriti, so how do you understand within its Nivriti Pravriti? Means everything has, you have, how you'd say? Like everything has a beginning, give an example, something on time, maybe beginning, middle, and end. Like let's say the beginning of cooking is, you know, we get all the vegetables together. The middle is we do the cooking. And the end is that we you know, or make the arrangements for serving, right? Now, each of those also has a beginning, middle, and end. You know, when you arrange the things, then you have to get all the things together, pick out your vegetables, get all your pots and pans, make sure they're all clean and all that. The middle is that you cut them all up like this and make them all ready. And then the end of that is then you divide that up about, okay, this goes with this, this goes with that, and all these things. Right? Cooking. The beginning, you put in your ghee, your spices, your things, you start to cook. The middle is that it's going, you know, nicely, that you see that the cooking is going nice. Then when it's finished cooking, and then at the end, certain things you have to put, special spicings or other things like that that you have to put, or ways that you have to, you know, finish it up. Like, you understand? So in the same way is that you have the Nivriti, the Daiva Varnashram, but within that you have the moods of Nivriti and Pravriti. Right? In other words, Nivriti, 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 Pravriti. You also get this like in astrology. You have a planet, you have nine planets, and it has an influence for a certain amount of time. Then within that time of that one planet, the nine planets also have their influence. You understand that point? Like that. So in the same way as within the Nivriti, that we see the Nivriti and Pravriti have their influence. But the purpose of it is to please Krishna. Nivriti meaning God-centered. But as God-centered means God-centered. It's all my stuff. I know I should use it for Krishna. So the center is on Krishna, but it's mine. I myself am going and giving it and getting the credits for giving it and doing all that. Well, the Nivriti, it's already Krishna's. You understand? So, and we also find that between everything, there's always what's called a sandhi or a junction. You have day, you have night, you always have the twilight. Right? So you'll have the like generally your, how we'd say, your traditional form of Nivriti, which is, you know, the detached orders of life, the Brahmachari, Vanaprastha, and Sannyas. And you'll have your traditional Pravriti, which will be the Grihastha. But at the same time, is you will see that you have this joint in between where you have a Grihastha who may have so many things but be Nivriti. An example would be Ambarish Maharaj. He is also known for Atmanivedanam, surrendering everything. But he was the emperor of the world. Right? But his arms he would use to, you know, touching the devotees, his legs he would use to walk to the temple, his eyes he would use to see the deities, his tongue to taste Krishna prasadam. Whatever he had, it was Krishna's. But he had the world. So the whole world was his, but as far as he was concerned, it belonged to Krishna. And it was just his duty as Krishna's servant to just manage it nicely. Right? Just like the temple president manages the temple, it's Krishna's temple, same way he was managing the whole world. It wasn't his. He was just in the position to take the responsibility to take care of it. Is that clear? Yes, Mata. In the Gita, Krishna says the Grihastha sacrifices the objects of the senses in the fire of the senses. Okay. So you have taste or rasa, there has to be two. You don't have one. You know? Just like, you know, it's like, what do you call it? Like if you have a tongue and nothing to put on it, there's no rasa. Right? So the object of the senses is what is these senses will become attracted to. And then, so that means that is offered onto the senses, but for Krishna's service. Right? In other words, like you have something and that is eaten, it has to go onto the tongue. So that, but that is, there you see, this is Krishna's prasadam, and you're engaging it in Krishna's service. So this means it has to go all the way down the line. Means we'll get into this later when we get more into Grihastha Ashram. But that means that all the aspects have to be engaged. You know? Like that. So one, therefore, if one doesn't sacrifice them, I mean, sacrifice is yajna. Sacrifice means that you are connecting yourself to Krishna through a particular medium. So we're connecting ourselves to Krishna through the tongue by tasting prasadam, or by speaking about Krishna, or by seeing Krishna. So in this way, so one has to be able to connect also the aspects of the senses, you know, to Krishna. All right? Like that. Yes. Yes.
You described the process of spiritual independence.
Okay. Question is on spiritual independence and material independence. See, material independence actually is an illusion because we think we are free, we are the controller, we are the enjoyer. We may be doing for Krishna, but still, like, we may think, oh, we're so restricted, you know, I have to wear this kind of cloth, or I have to cook in this way, like that. Why I can't be given the more freedom, I'll wear what I like, when I like, I cook what I like, how I like. So that freedom is there. That is called aropya bhakti. Aropya bhakti means, I like pizza. And to me, pizza is the best food. So naturally, I should give the best to Krishna. So I offer pizza to Krishna. Right? This is aropya bhakti. So, in other words, it comes down to what I prefer, my preference in the engagement of the senses. Right? Like, you know, I choose the incense, I choose the scents, I choose the pictures, I choose the colors, I choose what I wear, I choose... But I engage in Krishna's service. This is the aspect of it's mine, but I use it in Krishna's service. This is the pravritti very much, is that aropya aspect. Then, as we mature, then we naturally will come, if we have good association, understand the philosophy, we come to the platform as, well, I'm Krishna's servant, and I'm supposed to engage everything in Krishna's service. But he is a person, right? In Aropya City, I'm the important element, right? The emphasis is on the ashray, or the how you say, myself as the servant, it's on me, what I like to do, how I like to serve Krishna, right? But in the next stage, then we see it switches. It becomes, well, what pleases Krishna? What does Krishna like to eat? You know, do we hear of, you know, Rohini Mataji in the back kitchen there, you know, taking the dough and throwing it in the air. And, you know, Radharani is very expert at cooking down tomatoes into nice sauce. And Lalita Devi is very expert at pickling olives and, you know, making Parmesan cheese and all this kind of things. No, we find out if we read in the book that Krishna has a certain things he likes to eat. So then we start to think, I should cook these and offer these things to Krishna for his satisfaction. Right? You understand? And then Rupa Goswami mentions that along with this, of course, whatever's local, like cuisines and customs like that, these things can be engaged in Krishna's service. So you take the best of your whole thing and offer that also. But that's kind of like a side, is an interesting, you know, some variety or some interesting thing. But the main emphasis is on what Krishna likes to eat. How does he like his devotees to dress? You know, what kind of facilities does he feel the devotees should live in? Like that. You know, like standards of cleanliness. Do we keep it up to our standards or Krishna's standards? Right? You know? So like this, we start to change the mentality. Right? So that is there. So the nivritti means is we're looking at basically at what pleases Krishna. You know? But still within there, we always have to understand as we may be wanting to please Krishna, doing what he wants, but it's still my stuff and I'm doing it for Krishna. So there's always these subtleties. Nothing's like just cut and dry. That's why we must understand the philosophy behind these things. Then we know in the situation I'm applying it, because the external is not the item. It means there's some attitude we have, and because of that, there's an external, right? We're an angry person, and so then if some little opportunity comes up, we get angry, right? So then one could say only when they're showing angry are they angry, but they may be angry all the time. Someone who's peaceful, right? Then a situation comes up, there's a good chance they may not become angry. You know? So you can test what is the attitude by the external situation. Right? But the external situation is not complete in itself, that is the item. You understand? So the pravritti nivritti, as I says, the typical form of nivritti will be brahmachari, vanaprastha, sannyas. And the typical form of pravritti will be grihastha. As we mentioned, there is that Sunday where grihastha can also be nivritti. And we see if a brahmachari, vanaprastha, sannyas manifests the nature of pravritti, then it's not long before they cannot maintain that position and they have to switch to grihastha. You know? Like that. So that aspect is there. So one, that's why it says one must know both religion or the form of social structure and culture and interchange and the philosophy. Then it's complete. Otherwise, if you only know the philosophy, then whatever you do will be mental speculation because you don't know the culture, how to apply the philosophy. Philosophy has to become practical in our life. That becomes practical through the culture. And if you only know the culture but don't know the philosophy, then it's just sentiment. You're doing it just out of sentiment. So when it doesn't necessarily apply, you'll do it anyway. Just because, you know, you're afraid something bad will happen, this, that. Does that make some sense? Okay. So then, on this is that we may have more freedom on the material platform, but we will find that on the spiritual platform, we may not feel fully absorbed, right? But at the same time, with that freedom comes the binding of it. You want to have money, you have to make the money. You have to protect the money, right? You want to have wife and children, you have to take care of them. You can't just put them in the closet and when you don't like and whenever you feel like you want someone to talk to, open the closet, drag out the wife, dust her off and start talking and then, you know, like that. It's not, you know, it doesn't work like that. It means it's a complete package. So therefore, there is more restriction. Yeah, because of that illusion. But if one is situated on the platform of nivritti, then one may be restricted and one can't have so much facility, can't have so many this and that, especially brahmachari, vanaprastha, sannyas. They have to manifest like that. But on the spiritual platform, you're free, right? I'll give an example. You have a brahmachari. You know, you figure, oh, he has to do what he's told and this and that, and, you know, he can't make his own schedule program and all that. But now, he'll just go, get up in the morning, follow the temple program, then 9 o'clock, walk downstairs, take prasad, walk away, then go out, do some service, come back in the evening, you know, 5 o'clock, take some prasad again, walk away. Half an hour a day they spend thinking about prasad. You know, I mean, they can think about it all day, but I mean, actually, to make it happen, they only have to practically deal with it for half an hour a day. But now the grihastha has to deal with that practically half of the day. They have to generate funds to create the facility to eat. Right? So one may say the grihastha is more free because he can decide what he's eating, when he's eating, how he's eating it. But he is more bound up by it because of that so-called freedom. While the brahmachari, one can say, well, he doesn't have much independence, but he also has no responsibility to deal with it. You understand? So they're free. You know? No anxiety. You know, do this, they do it. Do that, they do it. The grihastha has so many things that they have to think about and they have to deal with. No question. Right. That's why the grihastha is considered like the parents of the brahmacharis, because they're in a position where they, in a mature state, have to take care of that. They have to take care of dependents, so then that mood should expand so they learn to take care of any kind of dependent. Right? Therefore, we see it's the grihastha ashram that specifically takes care of the young children, takes care of the old men, supports the brahminical culture, takes care of the cows, and trains the women. So all the five elements that must be protected, that is specifically the duties of the grihastha ashram. Right? You understand? Like that. Yes. Yes. Practical point is when we have some facility, take a brahmachari, and they have some things they need for their service. So then now do they have the right to lock it up so that when it's time for service they have it? Or because it belongs to Krishna, should just be left around, whoever wants to uses it whenever they like, and then when you need to do your service then you have to go hunting for it for 2 hours. Example would be, let's take the temple treasure. Now, is the money of the temple belong to the treasure? No. Okay. Now, can the temple treasure just leave it around for anybody to use?
Yes.
Yes. Ah. I see. We have an interesting system working in South America. Okay. So... they must take care of it. Their duty is to take care of that so that it can be used properly in Krishna's service. That's the meaning of the treasure. Treasurer must see that the money is being used according to how it's supposed to be used. Right? So in the same way, then we think, we understand it is, whatever we have, it is Krishna's. And we take care of it. Right? That is the mood. We have to take care because it's Krishna's. See, it's not that we only take care if it's ours. No, we take care better if it's Krishna's. Right? What if you only need it for 3 weeks? That you have to work out with the authorities. If you only need it 1 day in 3 weeks and others also are doing services that this can be used for, then it's worked out with them. But somebody must take care of it. And there's a saying in, I think it's... yeah, I think it's a Marwari saying. It's called Barwari. Right? It means it has 12 owners. So that means no one takes care. So there must be someone who takes care of it. Right? Someone who knows how to take care must take care, and it must be used. These are all the aspects of These are details of management. Those who know how to manage can help you with those points. And it's a matter of training so that others who are using it become sensitive to the situation and are not proud. Because otherwise, if one cannot understand that something belongs to someone else and you should respect it, this means that one will have to go through the pravritti marg to understand that. Right? Because nivritti means you understand it belongs to someone else, but I still have to deal with it and take care of it. Right? So it means we can have the mentality, it doesn't belong to me, I don't have to worry about it. Or it belongs to me, I worry about it. Right? But the point is that, or you have the person who, it belongs to me, I don't worry about it. Right? That's the easy come, easy go. Then you have someone who, it doesn't belong to me, but I take care of it. So that is what we're talking about. Nivritti means it belongs to someone else, but I take care of it and use it properly in Krishna's service. So if one is so insensitive, one cannot understand that things belong to others, I must take care. I took it from this place, I have to give it back to this place. Means unless they develop a sense of ownership, they will never be able to understand that you should take care of something. So then naturally the next step for them is get married. They will have so many things. They will think they're theirs. They will take care of it nicely. And then slowly as they mature and get purified, they will understand how to take care of other things. Because now they know how to take care of something. Right? Means you either learn how to take care when it's someone else's, or you're going to have to learn how to take care because it's yours. You know? Then we apply the sand into gold principle. If it's yours, ownership turns sand into gold. Only because it's yours. Right? But the platform nivritti is because it's Krishna's, therefore whatever is Krishna's, that's valuable. So I take care. In other words, it's a platform of maturity. Point is we must come to this platform of maturity by hook or by crook. So we either get there through the nivritti or through the pravritti. We don't care. As long as we get there. Right? At the end of life, we must be there. We must be detached. Otherwise, then, another birth. So both paths are, that's why it's worked out the way it is. You know, kids grow up in a certain amount of time. The body falls apart in a certain amount of time. So that, you know, the first so many years we're trained, the middle so many years, and we can engage if we need to in the pravritti. But at the end, then very Krishna's nicely arranged that everything falls apart on you. We may be very attached to the tongue, but after a while it doesn't taste so good anymore. Attached to the eyes, they don't see so good anymore. Attached to our physical strength, that goes away. You know? So then Krishna very nicely gives us the understanding that we have to become a detached. And ultimately we have to leave the body. So better to be detached, then it's not a problem. Right? It means we can read in the newspaper that, you know, 25,000 people just died in an earthquake in Azerbaijan, and you know, you just go, very serious. And that's all. Doesn't mean anything to you, right? But, you know, if you, you know, somebody, if your wife calls up and says, hey, your kid just was run over by a car, then it has some difficulty. So when we understand that it doesn't belong to us, therefore, when Krishna does take it away, it's not going to bother us. When Krishna does take away whatever situation we're in, or you know, position, or wealth, or family, or even life, it's not a problem for us. Right? We're peaceful. Peaceful means no material desire. So you must come to the platform, no material desire. So the process of the devotional service is to engage everything in Krishna's service, so that that all becomes purified. So then all we have is Krishna's service. Krishna's service, the devotees, right? Does that make some sense? Okay. Yes.
You were speaking about the emotional needs of the pastors. Are the brahmacharis exempt from these needs, or they're just directing them differently?
I see. Question is the emotional needs, or we mentioned about in the Grihastasham, so the brahmacharis, the brahmacharinis, they don't have these needs, or are they directed in a different way? So basically, the living entity has these three platforms of attachment: spiritual, emotional, sensual. So now, the more one can gain on the spiritual platform, the less one needs on the emotional and sensual. You want to find the more one can gain on the emotional, the less one needs on the sensual. Sensual is basically just the external form of the emotion in its normal state. You know? But just like you may have a friend. So to show that exchange, you may invite them over for lunch. Right? So the taking the prasad, that's not the form of the friendship. I mean, that's not the substance of the friendship. That's the medium through which it's expressed. Right? Because you can eat and be in any relationship, or just be just you and the prasad, just completely sensual. So the whole point is that it's a medium through which it can be expressed. So if one can work where the sensual is just a support for the emotional, and the emotional is just a support for the spiritual, like this, then one can get whatever one needs in the brahmacharya ashram. Brahmachari Vanaprastha Sannyas. But if one doesn't, one needs more support from that. Support means it's coming from conditioning. We've been in the material world since time immemorial. So we've been conditioned to eating, sleeping, mating, and defending for a long time. So now what's being asked is, in one lifetime, you give it all up. Right? So for the power of the holy name, that's nothing. So the restriction on this is simply us, the speed at which we can move. Therefore, Krishna gives these facilities that if one can hear about it, one can see it, one can practice it, good. If not, then one also can experience it and then come to that platform. Because the senses are also engaged on the altar of sacrifice. Right? So naturally, all these rasas are there, the friendship, these and that. But it doesn't require very heavy sensual input. You understand? Does that make some sense? Senses are there, senses have to be engaged. That's part of, you know, the process of Krishna consciousness. But it's just how much you have to cater to those senses. Right? It means brahmachari gets prasad, so if he's satisfied with that, Krishna has sent this and all that, that is there. But if it's, oh, I don't like this, this is crazy, I want to, you know, make my own arrangements, then, you know, it starts to expand. Right? So the emotional platform, that friendship, you know, with others, with the camaraderie, with the devotees, the relationship between senior and junior devotees, that can all be there and make a very nice, you know, devotional, you know, emotional support. You know? But just in brahmachari vanaprastha sannyas, one has to be able to drop the conjugal aspect. Because in that, then it means the full manifestation of that has a very strong sensual platform to it, which then disrupts the simplicity and everything of the brahmachari or the vanaprastha sannyas ashram. So therefore, they stay away from that aspect, right? Because when you engage the senses, then that needs so much facility, right? Then, you know, you need some privacy. Then, so that means facility, you have to maintain that facility. Then as children, then you have to take care of them, educate them, maintain them, train them. So all, so many things just expand, right? That's why, yeah. Okay, so therefore, then as we mentioned before, the brahmachari vanaprastha sannyas, life is more simple, because you don't have to engage the senses as much. Right? I mean, senses, you have a body, senses must be engaged, but it's just how much you engage those senses, like that. then in the what do you call it? In the Yavana. Yeah. So, and then the Grihastha is able to engage those senses, but according to religious principles. Then that is also sacrifice. Does that make sense? Anything else? Yes. 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 Point is being brought up is that if you have, how do you say, brahmachari, brahmacharini, and they like to be very simple, like to live in a very clean way, but they find it disturbing with so many others that they don't live properly in this and that, so then one might see that the grihastha ashram would be a facility in which one can control one's environment and then live in a more simple, proper way to be, in this way, facilitate one's Krishna consciousness. So is that, how would that be also a proper, you know, understanding of the of a proper path to serve Krishna? So this would be specifically engaging the mode of goodness in one's lifestyle and you know, dealings and everything. But still one has to see the mentality that is there. Still there is the aspect, the natural form of this would be nivritti, even as a grihastha. But you can still have a pravritti attitude if you still think it's my house, my this, my that, my everything. Because even the smarta brahmins are very clean. Very clean, very simple. You know, they don't get into many kinds of various attitude things, and dealings are very, very simple, like that. And, you know, you go to their houses, there's practically nothing in them, no furniture, because it's clean. You know, otherwise you can't maintain it, you know. Whatever furniture is or this or that, they generally, it's either for guests or for puja. But still, they may think it's all theirs, you know. So we still have to see that aspect, because then there's life in the mode of goodness, because then we bring in the aspect of varna here. The Brahmins generally will live very simply, like that, very clean, very neat, like that. The Kshatriyas will tend to generally have more facility, though they can also live very simply. They're generally extremists. They'll either have a lot of facility or no facility. Like you see, they can live in the palace, they can leave it and go to the forest. Like that. The Vaishya will naturally have facility because that's just the result of their work. It means the king may take taxes, but he also has businesses to distribute that for use. So they may or may not have a whole lot. Generally, yeah. But the Vaishya, by nature of work, you must get return. So that means from that they will invest in proper things and those things that help them, you know, inspire them in that service while they're maintaining the grihastha mood, right? At vanaprastha that may change. And then shudras, depending upon their position, generally they will also be a little bit more simple, unless they become, they're very, very expert in all that, you know, very famous. Then they may have a lot of stuff, but the general tendency is you see there's no cleanliness. There may be, there may be cleanliness but no purity. Right? This is generally what you see, is that in the Brahmins and Kshatriyas, they're clean and pure. The Vaishyas, Shudras, they will be clean, but not necessarily pure. Means the better, the upper levels of Vaishyas, the aristocratic ones, they will be very pure. But generally in the Shudras, you see that there's not a great interest in purity. Cleanliness may be there. They may have a very nice house and very nicely kept. But, you know, things like purity, you know, washing hands, you know, whatever they do, you know, it's not necessarily kept in a pure state. You understand the difference? Pure meaning, like, to the platform of cleanliness like you'd use for deity worship. You know? Things like that. You know, washing feet after going to the toilets. You know, what's our standards? You know, eating with our hands and then touching things. These kind of things. These make a difference. So that comes in a bit with the own nature, the varna nature. But, of course, as we discussed day before yesterday, the Daiva Varnashram, because the platform is that of a realized Brahman, means a Brahman realizes the purpose of all the Vedic knowledge is to serve Krishna. When the Brahman surrenders, he becomes a Vaishnava. So naturally a Vaishnava includes Brahmanism. So the culture of the devotees that practice Daiva Varnashram is that of Brahminical culture. So generally the standards of cleanliness, standards of lifestyle, all that are common amongst all devotees. Though we may see some practice it more strictly and some don't. But the normal standard is there. So if one likes to practice it, that means either the devotional mood is stronger, which is the most important element, or one has more of a Brahminical, Kshatriya, or Vaishya kind of tendency. If we find that maybe the devotional side is not as so strong, but the Varna side is very strong, so therefore one maintains cleanliness, purity. Or there may be a combination. So that's why this again gives rise to, and if we understand the principles behind it, then one can start to see how it functions. Because ultimately we see that it's just it's a application of the philosophy. Varnashram is just the applying the philosophy in our life. And we know that the goal of this is to come to the transcendental platform. So if we understand that, then whatever position we are in, we can engage it. So therefore, in the Daiva Varnashram, one doesn't place the Varnas higher or lower. And they're placed this way. Just like in the Asurag Varnashram, then the Shudra is lower than the Vaishya, which is lower than the Kshatriya, is lower than the Brahman. Because of the ego. Because of the level of consciousness. But once you get into the devotional platform, then the level of consciousness is the same. Then it's a matter of kanista madhyam uttam. But you're dealing on the platform of anandamaya. You're dealing on the topmost platform of consciousness. Then, we're not finished. We just forgot what we were talking about. Problem is the mind moves quicker than the mouth. So sometimes the mind leaves the mouth behind. Move to the next point. Forget what... You know, because you're going on a thing. Then to balance that, there's another point. And then I forget where I was. So we're just talking about... We got through the koshas, anandamayi. What was that? No, there's five levels of consciousness, but there was a point that was supposed to support. there was some conclusion to that whole thing. Believe it or not, but there was some conclusion. That was it. Is the body of the Lord. See, is the Asurik Varnashram means the Varnas and Ashrams are superimposed on the body of the universal form. So the universal form is the material manifestation of Krishna, how Krishna through his energies has entered everything. But it's still material. It's not spiritual. Right? But in the Daiva Varnashram, it means that the Varnas and Ashrams are superimposed on Krishna's body. Right? So therefore, is Krishna's feet better than his head? Right? If they are, then you can say, or not, then you can say, yes, the Brahman, someone who's doing brahminical service for Krishna is better than someone who's doing sincere, you know, Vaishya, Shudra, Kshatriya service. If you want to make that distinction, right? But since devotees won't make that distinction, we understand whatever service you're doing for Krishna, that is your glory that you're doing that for Krishna. So therefore, whoever can do a particular service best, they should do those services. Then the system runs very, very nicely. So the only thing that stands in the way of us being able to apply that is just our material, just being in the material world for so long, we want to control everything, enjoy everything. So then we'll look at it, well, the Shudra's on the bottom of the pile and the Vaishya's got all the money, so that's pretty good, but then the Kshatriyas, you know, then they get everything from them and control the whole overall situation. And, you know, nowadays Brahmins don't get anything anyway, so forget that. So we want to be either a Kshatriya or a Vaishya. Right? So we have to avoid approaching Varnashram from the platform of control and attachment, but from the platform of from the philosophy, the reality of what I need to engage in Krishna's service. Then we can apply it very easily. Right? Because you look at it. Another way to look at Varnashram is rather than starting, well, we have the Brahmins, this, that, and you know the Shudras are in the bottom. First of all, Shudras are human. Right? Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra means Aryans. They are human beings. Right? Below the human beings, below the Varnashram, then you have the Pulindas and Kiratas and Andrans and, you know, the Siberians and all these. And then after listing all that, then Prabhupada says, or lower. Right? So then when we bring in the or lower, then we start to bring in the Western culture and, you know, America and Australia and all those things, because they're not even within those 12 tribes there, right? So then, you know, Shudra is a real, you know, elevated position, right? That's one way to look at it, very elevated, right? Another aspect is basically it just means when you look at the social structure, this is just your citizens. You have your body of citizenry in the kingdom. Right? You're just your body of personalities that live in the kingdom. From that, a few know how to do business, take care of the cows, you know, and generate economic development. There's a few. Then there's even less that know how to organize the total society or take part in that by managing a small part of that. Right, under someone who is more expert. And then there are a few of those who know how to teach, how to do the rituals, how to do these things. So if you look at it from that way, it takes on a whole different flavor. So it's just a matter, you have everybody, and then you have a few specialized, you know, general categories. Now within your general populace, then that in the Vedic sense will be divided into 64 categories depending upon the particular art in which one engages oneself. Like that. Depending upon, you know, whether it's whatever it may be. You know? So in this way, then, there's so much variety. So it makes it very, very, very easy. So the point is the Daiva Varnashram doesn't necessitate labels. This is the important element. The Daiva Varnashram doesn't need that someone be called a Brahmin, someone be called a Kshatriya, someone be called a Vaishya or a Shudra. It's not important because everyone's devotees, as we mentioned before. They're Brahmins who have, you have the Brahminical platform or the spiritual platform of the soul, right? The Vaishnav, which includes the Brahminical understanding. Then within that, you have the conditioned nature of a Brahmin. So you have Brahmin-Brahmin, or Brahmin by realization, conditioned nature of a Kshatriya. Brahmin by realization, conditioned nature of a Vaishya. Brahmin by realization and Shudra by conditioned nature. So therefore, it only means what service you're going to perform for Krishna's satisfaction. You do it. But because it's being done for Krishna, that itself is the Brahminical culture. Right? Vaishya does things for, a Shudra does things for their own fame, for their own benefit, for their own senses. Vaishya does something if they get profit. Like that. Vaishya will not work if there's no profit. Right? It's a mix of passion and ignorance. So passion is only inspired when there's results. If there's no results, then the ignorance is there. That's why they work. Right? You see, you go to a businessman, you know, they can make more money than they'll ever use. They can't use it. I think probably gives the example. Whether you're a poor man, you're eating 4 chapatis. When you're a rich man, you're still only eating 4 chapatis. So, therefore, the vices, they generate everything because that nature is that they have to keep generating. But they don't need it all. Therefore, the kshatriyas take the tax. Right? And then use it for others who are not generating. Right? For the Brahmins, for the Shudras, that the Vaishyas aren't taken care of. Like this. So the this specialized mentality then is important. You just see that this is just what I do for Krishna. Right? So it's not important because that's what we were going through. Then the Kshatriya, he is overseeing dharma, that everybody is engaged in their occupational duty and cooperating. Right? So they're working for dharma. Right? Shudras are working for kama. The Vaishyas are working for artha. The Kshatriyas are working for dharma. And the Brahmins are working for moksha. Right? But moksha is not ultimate. The real moksha is devotional service. Real liberation is engaging in Krishna's service. Therefore, a real Brahmin means one who is practicing devotional service. Their cultivation of knowledge, all that is for the Lord. So if a devotee, even though they may be doing a service that would be, you would say, is a Shudra service, they're still doing it for the Lord. By doing it for the Lord, that means that by nature, by realization, understanding their Brahmins. Right? This is why the Daiva Varnashram is not easy to understand. This is why the Daiva Varnashram, then we don't see it anymore. All that's left is some burnt remnants of the Asuric Varnashram, the caste system. Because this takes fine devotional intelligence to understand. If we come into Varnashram, who's in control, who's got the money, then one will never in a million years understand Varnashram. You have to understand the devotional philosophy that is there. In other words, if we don't understand the devotional process and the platform and position of devotee, like we see in the Nectar of Devotion, the first 5 chapters, Rupa Goswami describes Samanya Bhakti. Samanya Bhakti means the general symptoms of devotional service, the general platform. So there he describes the glories of devotional service, how it's beyond karma and jnana, and yoga. He describes what is the position of the Lord, the position of the devotee, how glorious the devotee is, how special they are, And the whole process that devotional service is the ideal, performing activities for Krishna. We understand who Krishna is, the process, and the goal is for Krishna. Once that's explained, then from the 6th chapter to the 19th chapter, then he explains just the whole process, the Abhideya, how to perform it now. And he gives so many rules and regulations. The 6th chapter is just all the aspects of sadhana bhakti, 64 items. So when one can understand all this, this is the Abhideya. Then it's very easy to understand how, because this is the platform of sadhana, then how service for Krishna, according to nature, supports that. And then farther than that is how the pravritti marg, means the varnashram in pravritti, also then supports that. Right? In other words, you have sadhana bhakti, which is purely nivritti. Then you have engaging in the Lord's service, which is nivritti. And then, that means it's seen as Krishna's service, whether it's in the temple or it's in the house. Or then you go to do work, pravritti, it means it's my work, my result, but I give it to Krishna. So he gives these different stages. So when one can see that very nicely, then it's very easy to organize it. So basically one has to be able to understand it, help teach others, help be able to organize it, or just be able to follow it, practice it. Means under the direction of others. So we either understand it, can apply it in our own life, and can help others, you know, by giving advice and direction and all that, or we help organize it, or we follow. Right? Saying, what is it? Lead, follow, or get out of the way. You know? There's no other options. Like that. You have a good leader, good follower. Like that. And then in whatever way we can understand or help others, then we help. Just like the Vanaprastas. They've come through, they've had so much experience in the dealings within the ashram and all that. You know, practical experiences of life. They can help those others, the grihastas and the brahmacharis, brahmacharinis, understand how it works. They can also help, you know, even the sannyasis by pointing out just practical things that are there. So that, in other words, they can give, they've gone through this. They can give practical teachings to others. It may be just within that area, but that's very valuable. Right? Very valuable. So whatever one knows, whatever one can understand, one helps others. This is the Brahminical platform, the Brahminical culture. One second, yeah, then we'll come back. Yes.
There's also a position called do the needful.
Do the needful, yes.
So that would be the Vaishnava.
Yeah. Means do the needful means there's a position called do the needful. So this will come up either. This will generally be what's called, you have your ordinary service, or regular service, and you have emergency service. That's one aspect. So regular service means just what you do, everything's going normally. Emergency is some special situation where we may have to do a service that's not actually our nature. So we can do that for a short amount of time, depending upon our platform of purity and realization. We can do for more or less time. Like that. So therefore, the leaders must be very careful in gauging this, that when somebody is doing emergency service, they don't let them do it too long. Otherwise, their spiritual life may be jeopardized. So this is important to understand that. Someone may last a few days at it, someone weeks, months, or even years, but at some point, if they're not engaged in their natural service, there'll be a problem. Prabhupada commented on that. He said there were some leading devotees. He said if they had been engaged in their own nature, he said they wouldn't have gone away. You know? One went away, got right into business. The other one went away and got right into acting. You know, but they were taking up very strongly just like Brahminical activities. And they did it for a long time, but they couldn't keep doing it. So then one should be able to balance. The other aspect is within one's area of ability, one has to be able to see what is practical, not be theoretical, and get a practical result. It means get the needful done. It means you may have a normal way that it should be done, even within one's own normal service, but to get it done in this situation, then you may have to adjust things to make it happen. But we understand that also, we do that as long as that needs to be done, but there can be an ideal situation, right? Like in the beginning, we may do things in so many different ways, But after a while, then when facilities are there, one may do it in other ways. Just like you want to start a new temple, but you don't have, trained managers, this, that. So then someone comes in and starts it. But you generally see after a while, as things get established, then those who can start something new generally lose interest or kind of go on the side. Because there's a different way you do things in the beginning than when things get established. And those who can organize kind of bigger things and relate with more aspects, more complex, you have to bring that person. You can't just say, well, this person was there in the beginning. And that style that they used, why it shouldn't continue? No, as things develop, it differs. So you do, in other words, you do the needful. You maintain it how it needs to be taken care of. So situations change, one has to apply. So if one knows the goal, knows the process, knows the relationships within this situation, then one can get it done. But if one doesn't, then generally one will be caught up by the externals or textbook form of it, and one can't function. So that's not practical. That's not it's not considered the best kind of intelligence. The best intelligence is considered that intelligence in which you can discriminate. Does that make sense? Okay. Yes, Martin.
You've mentioned a couple of times brahmacharis and brahmacharinis, but I kind of thought that basically women that didn't really sort of follow the four ashrams. So do you think it's important for women to follow the same course?
Okay. question is that I had mentioned in a few times about brahmacharis, brahmacharinis. So basically, is that an important platform? Because generally you'll see that it's pointed out that girls wouldn't follow all the four ashrams. So then, how you say? What would be the proper understanding? So basically, then, the same principles apply. It's just a matter of the situation in which they are applied. In other words, there is a point of training in the life where one has to learn and be trained. Then there's a time when one practices that. And then you have a time when one has to become detached from material engagement. So that everybody has to go through. It may have different forms. The brahmachari may practice that, in the ashram, while the girls may practice that at home, like that. And after some time, the grihastha may practice that, the men may practice that as sannyas, while the ladies will continue practicing it as vanaprastha, like that. So the result is the same, but it's just the detail of how you do it may be different. Just like you want to get somewhere, by walking or take a bus or take a car or take a plane or like that. It means, but the result is you have to get from point A to point B, right? And depending upon your situation, like if you're out in the middle of the ocean, and you want to get to the shore, it would be very nice if someone says, "Well, why don't you just catch a taxi?" But it won't work. You have to swim, like that. So one has to be able to apply the getting of the result. In other words, what Flame Rasa was saying, is about do the needful according to the situation you're in. So you'll generally see, this is probably one of the next topics, maybe not today's, but we can get into it in the next class, is the, how do you say, yeah, the next class, is the natures of the men and women, because there's actually a difference in nature because of the physical and mental, intellectual makeup. It actually produces, you can get the same result, but in different ways. So the point is you want the result. We are not attached to the external form of it. See, when people fall down to the sensual level and they do not really have an understanding or maybe an experience of the emotional platform, it means actual emotion, not just, it means attachment to the senses. Because you may have, you wanted to eat something and then something happened and you couldn't get it and you get upset and get angry. So emotions are there, but that's not the emotional platform. Emotional platform means exchange between two living entities, not between you and your senses. Like that. So nowadays in the modern culture, see, if you go back some years, means many years, then the most essential aspects in the culture in that was the emotional exchange. Someone's word, you know, the friendship, you know, the support, all these different things. You know, you read all the old literatures, you know, your classics and all that, and they're talking about all this kind of stuff. But if you read the modern literatures, then all it is about the senses, right? It means before, if they talked about friendship, it means kind of like what they're doing together, this, that. But now it's just friends means they go out and do all kinds of nonsense. You know, or the conjugal relationship before it was, you know, that the emotional exchange and relationship that was going on between husband and wife or the parents and the children, these were the essential elements. But nowadays, conjugal rasa means sex. That's it. If sex isn't manifest, there's no conjugal rasa. Like that. You know, you have to go from 0 to 100 in, you know, 1.3 seconds, right? You know, like that. There's no, finer, what would you say? Emotional nuances that were manifest before in that relationship have kind of like disappeared. And now it's somebody just, they meet each other and then as short as possible of time, then sex. That's it. They don't bother with all the finities in between, like that. In other words, it's basically working on the platform of the dogs. Dogs don't get into much, what do you call it? Preliminaries, you know, there's no, like that. You know, so the whole point is that the culture has changed, where nowadays it is becoming more and more rare for someone to have experienced actually the platform of emotional rasa. And because of that, then they see everything in external form. And because of this, then you get issues. You know, and Prabhupada would joke about this. Someone is, oh, save the whales, like that. But they themselves will eat cows. You know, so he's saying that it has no meaning. Because if you're into saving, then you would want to save all life. Right? That is the platform of the emotional rasa. But they only take it as far as just their interest. Like that. So it's not very developed. It's very, very meager. So because of that, we get into externals. And then one of the biggest tricks of Maya is to create this illusion that you have to create external physical equality between men and women. Because it's very important, this point, for Kali Yuga and Kali Raj to establish this. Because if you don't establish this, you can't break down the culture. Because the moment that men and women are exactly equal is in sex. Because if you want to have a child, you have to have, you know, 50% of the input of the wife, 50% of the input of the husband. It has to be totally equal. Otherwise, it won't function. So therefore, we see, as we try to create this more and more on this platform, we see the culture around us is just more and more just sex. Equality means sex. That's all. So therefore, in the Kali Yuga, you have to, if you want to break down the people from spiritual to emotional and down into sensual, and then from sensual you just degrade them more and more from humans down into animal, then you must establish this platform. Right? And to do that, you means you must remove the emotional exchanges between them. You must remove the emotional platform. That cooperation. And it simply has to be broken down by position, authority, power. Then there is equality. Rather than the commonality, the rasa is there of working together. Right? It means just like the parents and the child. The parental rasa works because of the service mood between both of them. The parent wants to serve and take care of the children, and the children are protected. So the children actually have more freedom. They do as they like. They may, you know, they deal. They're given more space. Right? The responsibility is more on the parent. And the exchange is very, very nice. But if the parent is simply interested in getting out of it what they want, you know, why do I have to be restricted by this kid all the time? Why can't you just go out and play on the highway and take care of yourself? You know? And the kid is just, you know, why I have to listen to you? You know, why can't you just hand me how much money I want and I do whatever what I want? Then we see the whole thing breaks down because the emotional platform is gone and it's simply sensual. So in the same way, you have the same kind of reciprocation in a different form between husband and wife. You know, between daughter, father, between mother, son. All these things are there. And if you break it down to its sensual element, then the whole thing falls apart. So we have to be very, very careful in approaching the Varnashram, that we do it means and keep intact the emotional platform. Naturally, the sensual platform will be there. But if you lose the emotional platform, then you will lose everything. Right. So, as devotees means, and that you can make Varnashram function, means the Asuric Varnashram. Now, if you want to make Daiva Varnashram function, then you have to also, most specifically, maintain the devotional attitude, a devotional exchange. That must be there. That must be the platform. Prabhupada says in the first canto, that the relationship between the husband and wife must be based on the spiritual platform. That's what it has to be based on. Then from there, then there's the emotional platform as husband and wife, how they support and help each other in their services. Right? And then you also have the senses. Right? It's just like the dati pratigrinati guyamakati pichati bunkte bojayate. That's based on affection, exchange. Then, depending upon the situation, it will have different mediums. Maybe, you know, taking prasad, maybe giving gift, talking confidentially. Those themselves don't make affection. Those are the symptoms of already affection. But we see senses are being dealt with there. Right? And emotions are being dealt with because of the spiritual platform. So when you have the spiritual platform intact, then the emotional platform can be intact. And when that's intact, the sensual platform can be intact. Otherwise, if you just have the sensual platform, then you have animal culture. That's it. And we must remember, animal culture is below the platform of a Shudra. Because a Shudra is a human being. Not only a human being, but a human being who is interested in elevating themselves. Not going down, but going up. Like that. So, we have to keep these things in mind. Yes? We'll get more into detail of that in the next class. Yes.
So, according to what you said, what I understood is that Daivi Varnashram is more like for devotee society. What about the rest of the society?
Question is the Daivi Varnashram, from what is being said, is specifically for devotees. So what about the rest of the society? So basically, our mandate is to try to, as much as possible, make the rest of the world devotees. Like that. And then the devotees can advise, you know, anyone how to run anything. You know? Just like, and the two systems can run side by side. The Pandavas are following Daiva Varnashram, the Kauravas are following Asurik Varnashram. Because the external form of it looks the same, but the mood looks completely different. Means the Pandavas do everything for Krishna, the Kauravas do everything for themselves. So therefore that's Asurik, and the other one's Daiva. But they'll both eat with their right hand, you know, wash their hands after eating, you know, wear their dhotis and wear their saris. It'll all be the same. So the Vedic culture, as we mentioned, is that what reflects from the spiritual realm. So what they do there is what we do here. Those parts that are applicable to us as the acharyas give us. Does that make sense? So therefore, we ourselves follow and do as best as we can. And then, by that example, others can also be attracted and follow. But otherwise, it's if they follow the Varnashram system, then it's culturally good, but not necessarily spiritually. Because the Varnashram is your religion, but the philosophy also has to be there. So like Hinduism means everyone follows the Varnashram or the Vedic culture. So by culture, what we do, what the Indians do, what everybody does that lives in India, then is the same, basically. Just there may be differences in emphasis depending upon the community or depending upon their goals. But the philosophy is totally different. That's when we think of Hindu, we think of one who has, you know, the 5 million different philosophies, you know, anything and everybody's God, like that. So we are Vaishnav by philosophy, and we are, you know, we follow the Vedic culture. You know, so you have the Varnashram Dharma, which is common to anyone who accepts the Vedas, and then you have the Sanatan Dharma, which means you understand the conclusion of the Vedas. So both these have to go on at once. So Asurik Varnashram means that you only are accepting the Varnashram without the Sanatan. And then Daiva Varnashram means you're accepting Sanatan and the Varnashram together. You know, for the preaching mission, for the Kanistas, for the Madhyams. And if we only accept Sanatan Dharma without the Varnashram Dharma, then you end up with Americans. Americans. Because we see slowly the American culture is slowly taking over the world, influencing everything, breaking down everything. You know, the culture, the dress, the like this. So you end up with the Western culture. You know, whatever. Now in this form, there's still some differentiation between continental Europe and England and Australia, America, but very slowly, quickly, they're all kind of breaking down. They don't follow their old lifestyles and all that as much as they used to, like that. It's very much becoming very... So, basically, that's the choice. We either follow Varnashram, or we have to follow Western culture. There's not a third choice. Like that. That's the thing here.
I heard that Srila Prabhupada said that first establish varnas and then ashrams. Do you have any reason for your seminar to start first ashrams and then take the ashram, the varnas?
No, because I established the varna first, Brahman. Now we're going through the ashrams. We don't follow Kshatriya Dharma or Vaishya Dharma or Shudra Dharma. We follow Brahminical Dharma. Means the I already pointed out that the devotee is a realized Brahman. So therefore our culture, our exchange is Brahminical. How we deal, how we dress, how we act, all it is Brahminical. Right? And then, from that, then we need to understand the ashrams. Because those are also for the purpose of spiritual upliftment. Then, once those two are understood, then one can look and see whether that completely takes care of one's conditioned nature. If not, then one can look at doing the occupational duties of a Kshatriya, Brahman, Vaishya, and Shudra. You understand? Does that make some sense? Because the thing is we're only doing that between the morning and evening program anyway. You know? It's not that, you know, the Kshatriya is going to walk into the temple with his umbrellas and his entourage like that, with trumpets blowing and elephants in the front and all that, and they're going to come in and somebody's going to say, "Move aside, move aside, the Maharaj is coming," and this and that, and then they're going to come in and then they'll be, you know, like that, and then, you know, everyone will move out of the way and then he'll lead the kirtan or something. No, it won't work like that. It means we follow the Brahminical culture. We dress and act like Brahmins. Because that is the minimum standard accepted for a Vaishnava. That's why Bhaktisiddhanta established the wearing of the Brahmin threads. Because he says, minimum people should accept the Vaishnava as a Brahmin. Even they can't understand what a Vaishnava is, they're so materialistic, but they shouldn't accept them below the standard of a Brahmin. Therefore, everybody's wearing a Brahmin thread. Right? There's also quotes where he said, not everybody has to take second initiation. And that if one's nature is, you know, like that, the one can't relate with and perform like deity worship and all that, then there's not so much importance to taking second initiation. Because second initiation is just a refinement of the broad picture of chanting Hare Krishna. You understand? That just makes it more specific, a detail within. So the Hare Krishna mantra can take one back to Godhead. So if one doesn't have, if one can't develop the, what do you call it, the qualities, these Brahminical qualities, then it's not so important. You know, like that. Because, but still, the culture, we follow the Brahminical culture. Like that, because Vaishnava is other. This is just whether the conditioned nature can handle the duties of the dvijas. You understand? The Brahmin, Kshatriyas, Vaishnavas.
Since a Vaishnava is working on the Brahmin platform, even if he is so close to the conditioned nature, in order to be recognized by the spiritual master as a Vaishnava, he is not going to get second initiation?
Not necessarily. The question is that if a devotee is doing service and all that, but he has a nature of a Shudra, then does that mean, is it not necessary to become established on the platform of second initiation and recognized in this way by the spiritual master? Therefore we see Srila Prabhupada put the emphasis on the first initiation, because the holy name is where we put the strong connection. See, before Srila Prabhupada, then the strong connection is put on the second. In other words, only those who could come to that platform were accepted as very serious devotees. Right? So it restricts. Means anyone who was interested would be given Harinam, but it wasn't considered a serious connection. Right? But Srila Prabhupada established that is a serious connection. And then within those, within that platform, those who have the qualifications, they can get second. So that's a refinement of the whole Panchasamskara. Means that we just shift where the emphasis, because then we can broaden the preaching, and we solidify more the connection with those with Krishna through the spiritual master, and maybe a little, you know, a lesser known fact of the Pancharatra system, is that by performing a activity in deity worship, like performing an artik, and watching the artik, you get the same benefit. There's no difference. The pujari offers the artik, and all the devotees who watch, they all get the same benefit. And this is the wonderfulness of the Pancharatrik system. So therefore, everybody can get the same benefit. Even you can say, well, the other one is the mantra and the yaga. But the mantra is called Nam Atmika, means the Gayatri mantras, the holy name, is their life. So they don't work without the holy name. So if you have the holy name and you have brahminical qualifications, they work. If you don't, the holy name's working anyway. Because the holy name is what gives life to the others, so the holy name can give you everything. Right? And the deity worship, you can watch the deity worship and get the same benefit. Right? Even as it is, one may say, how many of those with second initiation actually go on the altar and actually do some direct puja? Right? Maybe once you get your thread, you're fired up for a few weeks or what, few months or like that, isn't it? And then after that, once you know it, then you want to do some other service. And then it leaves those who have that nature to do it, or those who somehow or another don't have anything else to do. You know? Like that, no? Few cases, but they don't last very long either. The ones that last are ones that can do it.
So, suppose we are now like in a big meeting and like something like TVC meeting or something. Okay, somebody said that chairman or something. Now we are going to take care very nicely of our nation. Who, according to what you said, only the brahmanas or those who are working as externally as brahmanas, they should get brahminical initiation.
No, brahmin, kshatriyas, vaishyas,
yeah.
they all get. They all get. And a shudra can get if he identifies more as a devotee and less as a shudra. It's just a matter of where you put your priorities. See, the nivriti means Krishna is first, my conditioned nature is second. And then the when you get into the pravriti is my conditioned nature is first and Krishna is second. It's just like this. You see devotees there. They are always coming to the temple. They're always making it. Whether they're living in the temple or outside the temple. They have a job, they don't have a job. Whatever it is, they're there. Because that's their priority. Then you have other devotees. They'll show up once a week, once a month, only for Janmashtami. Because their priorities are different. You ask them, what is their ultimate goal in life? And every devotee will say to go back to Godhead, to develop love for Krishna. Everyone. But their priorities at the present are different. My business, my family, my this, my that. That's more important than you know, attending more regularly the temple programs and this and that. It means that's if they're close enough. If they live way out in the middle of nowhere, that's another thing. Then they make their own temple in their own house. You understand? So it's just a matter of where you put your priorities. So someone whose priorities are not, so then what's the need? You know? Unless they're going to be, you know, doing worship and all that in their own house. Like that. But generally you'll see most devotees will get. Right? They won't. It'll be more of a rarity they won't. But of course, we can be strict about the standard so that they don't get just because of sentimentality, but they actually have some qualifications, because if one doesn't really have the brahminical qualifications, means by realization, understanding, then the mantras don't have so much effect. Right? Hare Krishna doesn't care about initiation. You're not initiated, you receive Hare Krishna, you start chanting, and immediately you're purified. And Hare Krishna will bring you to the platform of initiation. But the Gayatri mantras work in a different way. You're qualified, they work. You're not qualified, they don't work. That's all. That's just the way they are. Because they're even though it seems that it's of a higher standard, they're of a lower standard. It means Hare Krishna is the big picture. Hare Krishna is the spiritual realm, right? It itself contains Vrindavan, right? So if we chant in that mood of worshipping Radha Krishna, it goes, well, then that's where we'll go. But the Gayatris then are specifically showing Guru, Lord Chaitanya, Radha and Krishna. So they're just a refinement to give that direct concentration on Vrindavan, not in Vaikuntha or Ayodhya or somewhere else. Right? Someone who wants to go to Vaikuntha, they chant different Gayatris. Right? You want to go to Vrindavan, you chant these Gayatris. You understand? But the holy name already contains Vrindavan. The holy name is the son of Nanda Maharaj. Right? So it's just an added help. So if you can qualify for that, then you can take advantage. So that qualification comes by chanting, by association. Then that comes. Is that? What time is it? 12 o'clock. Okay. Should we continue or should we stop here? It's been 2 hours. I don't know. Go for a few, little bit more. Yes? Varna is?
Not important for women, and they just accept the varna of their husband.
Generally, that we could get, I mean, that's a whole discussion to get into the full details of it. So, but which can be discussed tomorrow. You know? But the essential point is probably be easier to discuss it tomorrow. It in itself is a whole class. If that's understood, it makes the whole subject very, very easy. Like that. Because we have to... Okay, we can give this answer. We have to understand what is less intelligent. This is a very important point to understand. This is probably one of the most misunderstood aspects of our philosophy. What does mean less intelligent? So, less intelligent in the Vedas does not mean memory. It does not mean what knowledge you have, what experience you have, you know, expertise you have on the material platform. It does not mean also just what you've memorized or have knowledge of the spiritual platform. But what it is, real intelligence, means that intelligence which can get you across from the material world into the spiritual world. It means that knowledge which gets you across the viraja. So that means to be able to discern between matter and spirit and to be practically be able to apply it. In other words, intelligence means practically being able to apply the knowledge you have. That's realization. You understand that point? So therefore in the Bhagavatam we see example of after example of intelligence. Real intelligence is the devotee discriminated between matter and spirit went back to Godhead. That's why it says with this knowledge of Gita that even the Vaishyas, the Shudras, the women, the friends of the twice born, they can discriminate because it's so nicely given in such a simple way that you can intellectually tell the difference. Like that. Because by nature what happens, which is can be the whole discussion of the what do you call it? The topic tomorrow. Is that how the intelligence works in the men and the women are different. Like that. And because of that, it creates a situation in which when the women connect themselves with the men, then it helps them a lot in their spiritual advancement. That's why with Mataji's question before. I don't even know if did we even answer your question. Is that the girls will find it more comfortable being in the grihastha ashram or being under the protection of somebody, their father or their son, because they will get this particular kind of intelligence that is there that the man has. At the same time, is a man who has attachments will do better being in the grihastha ashram because there's certain aspects of the intelligence of the woman that will protect the man from falling down. So in this way, that cooperation between them then makes the whole grihastha ashram very strong, like that. But to explain this nicely will take some time, like that. So we'll do that. We'll do. But if you bring that up tomorrow, it'll be in case, as the, what do you call it? Said in the Bhagavatam, in the Kali Yuga, everyone's less intelligent. But, you know, because memory is short. Like that. So we... It's a very important point. Like that. Because if it's understood, it makes the whole thing very natural. Problem is that it's taken a less intelligent just means stupid. But that's not less intelligent. You know? We'll say a materialist, even though they may be, you know, the emperor of the world, if they're not God conscious, they're less intelligent. But to manage the whole planet, you have to be pretty materially intelligent. So this is where the mistake comes. The two are muddled up, and then to prove that the women are intelligent means then they got to physically just do exactly what a man does to prove their intelligence. But we see that the Vedic culture has different ways to prove intelligence. Intelligence can be used in so much ways, you know? I mean, if all there is on the planet that's actually intelligent is to manage something or to be in control of something, you know, some position, some, you know, political situation, then we could call that, okay, then that's... But then we wouldn't call the Kshatriyas... Then the Kshatriyas would be considered more intelligent than the Brahmins. But the Brahmins are considered more intelligent because they discriminate more between matter and spirit. Therefore, they're considered higher, though the Kshatriya manages everything. So those who can manage and can, you know, do all the different things, that's considered not as good as one who can discriminate between matter and spirit. So real intelligence is that. Does that make some sense? Okay. We'll get into details tomorrow. Okay, this is the last thing, then we'll stop.
In the last class, you said that Prabhupada mentioned that as a taxi driver, whatever earning he got, he gave him to the temple, and he went back home back to God. When he left the body, his Prabhupada said that he's gone back home back to God. So, he was in which...
I think at the time that person, he was the temple president. But because that was before the book distribution and all that really took off, if they wanted to expand the preaching, they had to get money somewhere else. Like that. So this president got it by driving taxis. You know? I think that was San Francisco. Another president got it by, I think it was the president and the vice president, or the president and his wife, used to go out and clean the toilets at the university in the town at night. And this way they got money to maintain the temple. So this is called doing the needful. You know? It's just, we'll do anything for Krishna. So this is the platform of work for Krishna. It's Krishna's work. So it's a Brahminical platform, according to whatever condition that you may be able to do any, what, find something in which you can do, but it's purely Krishna's. You know, but you don't identify with it. You don't identify, I am a taxi driver. See, pravritti means there's more identity. You're doing business, I am a businessman. I make prani, it's my money. But I'm pious, or I'm devotional, I give it to Krishna. Right? But the other is, I'm a devotee. I may need to do business because that's, you know, what's required. But I'm not a businessman. It's just something I do. This is what I can do to raise funds, or this is what I can do to do a service. Someone else is manager. I'm not a manager. Someone else does pujari. I'm not a Brahmin. I'm not a pujari. This is my service. You know? Others may, you know, relate that with them, but that, because that's just, they're doing that service nicely for Krishna. Just like Arjuna is known, we when you think of the battle of Kurukshetra, you think of Arjuna. But why Arjuna? He wasn't the best warrior on the battlefield. Karna and Bhishma were greater. Drona. Right? Drona was said he would make him the greatest of his students. He didn't say he would make him greater than himself. Right? So of his students, he was the greatest. Right? Bhishma was taught in the heavenly planets. He wasn't taught here. You know, like that. So their positions were, but Arjuna is remembered because he fought for Krishna. He was a devotee. He did it through fighting, so he's thought of as a warrior. He's the best of the warriors because he did it for Krishna. But when you think of Krishna and Arjuna, you think the Lord and his devotee. You don't think Krishna and the best of the Kshatriyas, or the best warrior. No, you think of Krishna Arjuna as the Lord and his devotees. Nara and Narayan. Like that. So, if one doesn't identify with it, but one does it, then that is the proper standard of a devotee. That's the best standard, the safest standard. That keeps one within the Nivritti very nicely. But one can identify with it and still be a devotee. Right? Indra also identifies that he's a devotee. But he's Indra. He's Indra first and a devotee second. So only when things get rough, then he remembers Krishna. If things aren't rough, he doesn't remember Krishna. Right? But Arjuna, whether things are nice or not nice, he remembers Krishna. In fact, he prays for those moments when things aren't not nice, like Kunti Devi, to that we will be able to remember you more. Because otherwise we get caught up in our, you know, kingly duties and all that, and, you know, all the little details attending to, and then we may forget. But while we're always in trouble, then we'll always remember. So it's, the mentality is important. Okay? So I think we'll end here. Already over time. I hope. Sorry. Srila Prabhupada ki. Let us see. I have to think. Sitting for a long time. I practice at it. That's my service. I sit and I talk. So I can keep going. Problem is, I know everybody else is going to run out of steam. Especially this topic, we can go on for hours.
I got this very nice book. And since you are the person in charge of the Bhaktivedanta Academy, or Institute?
Academy.
Academy. I would like to ask you a favor, if you can write down some blessings to the worship of Lord Nrisimhadev.
Oh, I see. Are you worshiping Lord Nrisimhadev?
Yeah, I have a small Lord Nrisimhadev. You want me to show it to you?
No, not right now.
I would have to think
I
about
have it
this.
Here, actually.
Oh, you always wear it. Oh, it's so small.
Yeah.
Really? What kind of worship do you do?
Very simple. Just Nishimhadev, the mantra that we always sing in the morning, and one incense and water. That's all. So,
what am I supposed to write other than?
I don't know, Maharaj.
This thing is, then it's better to get the deity worship book. Then you know what is the. What did we say here?
How long ago?
Forward. Grabbed it. All this is, I don't even remember.
Writing.
Yeah. I mean,
maybe you didn't.
I remember speaking some of it, but it's just, I probably just spoke it and then they wrote it down.
What's the plant, Mark? What's the plant?
The plant? I've been told that it's a bird of paradise. We will have to.
Wait, you can fly off or what?
Watch your nose.
Oh.
Has a affinity for noses,
yeah,
when it flies.
Thank you.
Doesn't get dizzy. Oh, I see. Yeah, like this guy. Oh, very nice. From Puri?
I don't know from where, Maharaj. I would like to know.
Yeah, generally, this style is made in Puri, but it looks like he's made something other than the soapstone. Looks almost like he's made out of something else. Maybe it's just good quality. There's Ugra Nishinga. So he's putting one on his knee.
Yeah. I found it in the back room. I was doing a Maha clean.
Ah.
And we move everything and we clean everything. And I cleaned like the same spot many times and all of a sudden was there in the middle. And I took it and I asked everybody to whom belong. Nobody.
One thing you might do is do it the other way.
The other side is softer?
No. See, the things all these may get in the space.
Uh-huh.
So you should, you know, do something to that edge. Or you can make something where you can slide inside. Just some way so you don't get all these things in his face. You understand?
I found this little bag there in the floor.
So he lives in the bag. The Shunadeva lives in the bag.
Oh, I know the one lives in the
bag. That's Samputa. This is Sambasta. The auspicious bag. I guess Puta means box. Yeah. Samputa means the holy box. Sambasta. Holy bag. Some bust in the shop. Okay. Boom. That was after the class. Yeah, we kept on talking. So then all the swamis came by. Yak, 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 yak.
When was that? Today?
No. Day before yesterday. You were doing it before when we were just going up to 12, and then we kept going. We were 1 o'clock, and then. And Govinda Maharaj and Shiva Maharaj came by and says, you're going to talk until the cows come home. And I says, the cows come home at 5 o'clock. It's only 1 o'clock. And then Shiva Maharaj went, Mr. Hotra Maharaj came and reminded us it was time for lunch.
Do you think that there's possibility for us to get a copy of your outline?
This I haven't even read. This is Bhakti by Bab Maharaj. Like that. This is Bhakti by Bab Maharaj. He's supposed to do it. He's been asked to put something together. But, you know, this is what he's gotten written down, and now he's stuck, you know, just forgetting the outline of it.
No, you were supposed to do it.
Oh, I'm supposed to also.
from your leg too. So.
Yeah, it's probably take that and then distill that down into the points and then try to put them in a way that they're organized. Because generally every time I discuss on this, they'll go in a different line. Like this one somehow or another stayed very philosophical and just is not coming down into the like practical stuff. While some of the other places is just after 5, 10, 15 minutes it just goes right into practical and then from there we'll touch on philosophical points. Somehow or another just this one's working this way.
We will have classes about how to apply, like at the end, how to introduce or how to apply,
easy. I mean, is you find those who have Brahminical or Kshatriya natures who can understand this philosophy of the Varnashram and let them then sit down and discuss how to implement it. That's how it gets done. That's how it was done in the Vedic times, and that's how you can do it today. It's just like you want to boil water, you have to take it, put it in a pot, put it on the fire. It worked 5,000 years ago, it still works today. So the whole point is those are the people who are supposed to do it. Those who have managerial abilities, they will establish it. You know, because the Kshatriya means he has the same philosophical understanding as a Brahmin. But they have the practical ability to organize and manage things. Right? While the Brahmins, they have the understanding, but they don't have the interest to organize the whole thing. They'll give advice, but they're detached, so if the kings don't follow their advice, then the king's the one's going to run into trouble, not them. And the Kshatriyas have to be humble enough that they, even though they have control of everything, they still listen to the Brahmins. Like that. So it takes. That's why it says in the Gita that the Brahmins and the Kshatriyas work by character. Right? If you read in the Gita, it goes through Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Shudras. It says the Brahmins and the Kshatriyas are working by these qualities. It doesn't say work. It just says qualities. But then when it gets to the Vaishyas, it says, well, they do farming, they do trade, they do a business, banking. And the Shudriyas help the others. They work by occupation. They're seen by the occupation because they may or may not have qualities. Right? But the Brahmin and Kshatriya, if there's no qualities, you don't have a Brahmin or a Kshatriya. But you can have a businessman even though he has no good qualities, but he's still a businessman. You know? You have an artist, they may have no good qualities, they're an artist. You know?
But somebody may say that you already became too philosophical.
That means them step forward who does it. Means you bring up a practical solution and it can be there. Because otherwise devotees can't figure out how to do it. Problem comes is, who's supposed to establish it? You know? They even today can't understand whether Varnashram is the ideal thing or do we have to make up something new. They don't understand the philosophy. You don't have an option. You either follow Varnashram or you follow the culture that your mother brought you up in. That's it. You don't have an option.
So in LA we were discussing the very same things, how to establish Varnashram. Very nice senior devotees. We made little interviews like that for the Bhakti program. And the conclusion of a lot of interviews was the way to establish Varnashram is through education.
Yes. That means Brahmins.
Because who will do it?
Right? That's just what I said. Yeah. The Brahmins know how to do it. They train other Brahmins and they train the Kshatriyas and then the Kshatriyas go out and do it. That's the only way it works. That's how the Vedic culture did it. So that's exactly how it'll work. But education means is that you have to have, means they can be trained in their things, but it should be also the right people do the right things. Means that the Shudras shouldn't be the one telling the Brahmins and Kshatriyas how to run things. They can express if they're having difficulties, and it's the business of the Kshatriyas to protect them so that they don't have anxieties. Right? But it's not their business to meddle in that administrative field. So if we want to get down to it, is those who can manage, let them step forward. those who can feel comfortable discussing the philosophy and the practical applications of Varnashram step forward. Those who say, this is too philosophical, we just want to get down to practical, they should come later when it's time to just do it. You understand? Mm-hmm. They should come later. They can put up their concerns on, we want to do practical, we see these obstacles, so you please work on these. Because that's how Kshatriyas work. No one tells Kshatriyas what to do. No one. You know? Vaishya Shudras can come to them, or other kings can come and say, we're having these difficulties. Please protect us. Please work this out. But how it's going to be done is up to the Kshatriya. The Brahmins will give them advice. If you do like this, according to this Shastra, in this time this king did this and he got this good result, or they did that and got the bad result. But the final decision is left up to the Kshatriya. So if we want to talk, you know, organization means those who can manage and understand, they should do it.
From your personal experience, you find in ISKCON, like, that type of Kshatriya mentality definable?
Yeah, you don't need many. You don't need many. It means not in the beginning. It'll cultivate, because the point is, like you said, you have to educate, so that'll take time. People have to, devotees have to see example, have to hear, have to associate. Then these qualities will naturally come, so you'll have more and more development of all the thing very nicely.
How this Varnashram will interact with the GVC, how the GVC will be part of Varnashram, or if he's outside, or...
No, it's all, everybody's within it.
Like... If we are thinking in International Society for Krishna Consciousness, and the GVC is like the head or something like that, and we are, the idea is to start Varnashram from the society to later expand in the rest of the society. So the GVC will be very like a crucial part to.
What is the most crucial part of a kingdom? What makes the kingdom function nicely?
The king?
That's
the advice of the Brahmins?
Yes. That's there. So they're the ones that...
The GVCs act as the Brahmins?
Like that, but Brahmins who know how to manage. Those are the ones that give advice to kings. Mm-hmm. Like that, there's two kinds of Brahmins that advise the kings. Brahmins who mainly do shastric work, but who can understand management. And Brahmins who are involved in the management. Like that. Those are the two kinds that are there. Mm. So you have to have both those kinds.
So in order to...
And because probably we saw it before, the GVC is to see that the spiritual standards are being maintained, devotees are being trained. The temple president is to see that the management, day-to-day management of the society is going on. So probably it's already established like that. You know, means the managers of the society are the presidents. You know, presidents, or now we have regional secretaries. The GBCs aren't supposed to do that, but because the presidents aren't doing it, so then they're having to do it. Or they were the presidents before, and then as they come up, then the new, you know, somehow or another just continues. They know management, they can give direction, but they're not the managers. They're the ultimate managing authority, means they tell the managers what to do. But to get it done, that's up to the ISKCON managers to do, wherever they are. There's a list of who's an ISKCON manager, you know, presidents, or, you know, there's a certain thing, you know, that who qualifies as an ISKCON manager. So they're the ones they're supposed to manage. Huh? Yeah, you know, like president's wife. You know, they're the ones that run the show. If someone called me a very interesting thing, just on this, Brahmacharini ashram, is that because I was complaining to one temple president, I was saying, well, why in your temple you don't, you know, protect the Brahmacharinis? Why you don't take care of them so that they feel taken care of, they can get trained nicely, and then naturally, you know, then develop from there? And he says, well, I started to do that, but then my wife got upset. Because he saw I was spending time and talking to these young girls and making arrangements for them and seeing if they were comfortable in their quarters and all that. And then the wife is thinking that, you know, next thing the guy will be off with one of these young girls because she's an older lady. So then, like that. So it's kind of like they slit their own throat, you know. Like that. So the whole thing has to be seen very nicely. So that Mataji has seen herself as, you know, so the president and his wife were like the parents of them. Then it would work very nicely. But the wife obviously didn't understand, either she never had kids or doesn't understand the platform of emotion. She only worked on the sensual platform. Therefore, she couldn't understand the relationships. You know, because the relationships, see, the Vedic culture is whoever you act, that's the relationship. You know? So it's like you have Arjuna and you have Urvasi. He goes to the heavenly planets. Urvasi is the main apsara there, the main courtesan. She's dancing and all that. And Arjuna comments to Indra, his father, that Urvasi is very expert, you know, most expert. So Indra, he's a devotee, and he's just commenting that this girl does, she's very good. Indra, in his mind, because he's a materialist, if he would only make that comment if he was trying to give some subtle suggestion, you know? So then Indra took it that, well, Arjuna would like to meet Urvasi, you know, in a more intimate, personal way. So then Indra called Urvasi and told her, you please go and, you know, fulfill Arjuna's desires. So she dressed up nicely and everything and came to his house, you know, where he was staying. And when she came to the door, he, you know, invited her in, and he was standing with folded hands and was speaking to her in a very reverential mood. And she was saying, you know, what's going on here, you know? You know, it says that, you know, Indra said I should come here for the, you know, for, you know, slightly different rasa. And he said, no, says you're in our line. You're our, you know, great, 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 you know, grandmother, because she was the wife of Puru Ravas, who was in their line, was in the Yadava line. I think of Puru, then Puru Ravas, then sometimes it comes down into Yadu.
Buddha.
Not being Buddha.
Yeah. I mean, it comes down, at one point, it comes down into their line. I mean, so in the line of their kings, she was the queen. So he was seeing her as his mother, you know, great grandmother. And so she got frustrated and cursed him to become a eunuch, you know, like that. So the whole point is that rasa is established. It doesn't matter the age, the time, the this, the that. That's just the way it is.
And when he became the eunuch, how do you say, eunuco?
Eunuch.
Eunuch. When he became the...
When he was in the court of Virata. Yeah. Because then she left, and the news got back to Indra that his son had just been cursed to be a eunuch. So that's not looking very good for Kshatriyas and all that, so as to have some potency. So then he went to Urvasi and asked her if he could do something about this. But curses once said, so she adjusted it that, okay, he'll be just for 1 year and whenever he chooses. So then he chose that time to be a eunuch when they were all hiding in the palace of Virat. So then the eunuchs can go in and deal with the women in the inner palace. The men can't go inside like that. It means there's certain quarters where the king can go and meet the queens. Means they have the whole inner palace, and then there's certain places he can go, and then they'll come and meet him there. But otherwise, the inside is for them. So the only ones that others can come in there is women. So all the maid servants live there, and, you know, the queens and, you know, all whatever it is, they move in there. But eunuchs can also go in there, because eunuchs are not seen as any threat, you know, like that. Yeah. So then he was personally teaching music and dance to the daughter of King Virat, right? And then at the end, when it was revealed that Brihannala was not just a eunuch, but was Arjuna, then for that kind of offense, then the king wanted to give his daughter as his wife. But he said, no, I've been training her like a student, so she's like my daughter. So I can't accept her as a wife. Because they're dealing on emotional platforms, not on sensual. I mean, Arjuna is no problem. There's not that much age difference between them. He could accept her as a wife if he was interested in the senses, but emotionally he couldn't do that. So he said, I will take her, but as the wife for my son. Like that. And that was Uttara. She married Abhimanyu, who was then the mother of Parikshit. Like that. So in the Vedic culture, the emotional platform is the most important. Therefore you get this thing, all brahmacharis see all women as mother. Or every man sees everyone but his wife as mother. Because that emotional platform is there, you can see that. I've experienced it myself. We were first came to India, I was 18. So 18, 19, a lot of traveling and even beyond that. But in those times, and we'd go to like life members' houses, Indians' houses, you know, aristocratic Indians' houses. And we'd be taking prasadam. And it wasn't uncommon in that because, you know, the whole house is involved. The father's there directing the service. The older women are in the kitchen cooking and that. And if the girls are old enough that they can properly do it, you know, or if they're sons, they'll do it. If not, daughters, they'll do it. They'll serve the meal. So you had girls that were easily our age, if not just a little younger, you know, also who are like 17, 16, 15, you know. But how they would deal with you and serve the meal, there would be no difference between them doing it and their mother who was 40 years old doing it. So you got fully the mood that they were dealing with you as son. So there was no problem in dealing like that. You know? Means it gets a little theoretical when the women don't act in this way. And they're acting in such a way that they can catch themselves with brahmacharis, so then it makes it hard to do that. But still it can be done. Because the point is it takes two to establish a relationship. So if you establish a relationship as mother, then it'll be very hard for them to act outside that. Like that. In the same way as if the girls establish that kind of relationship, either they're older than them, they're like father, then there's the husband, or they're junior to them, then it works. But that's all on the emotional platform. So that's the thing, that's what's lacking. The only reason Varnashram can't easily be understood is because it works from the platform of the emotions. And then you engage the senses accordingly. A businessman does business because he wants profit. How it works is you buy something cheap and sell it more expensive. But it works because he wants results. You know, financial results. Otherwise, it's not going to work. Brahmins, the reason they can't do business is because they don't want the result. If they want the result, then they can get it. But they have to have that Vaishya mood to get it. So it's a mood first. You know? You understand? So all these things are there. The external is just the manifestation of what's inside. Like that. So that's what's lacking in society, is we have plenty of spiritual understanding, you know, I mean we've had plenty of sensual understanding, like that, but emotional understanding is not very great. You know, you find it in India and all that. Yes.
It's off the subject.
Oh, then we'll get to it. If you don't mind. Okay. If you have time, let us just see on this subject, and then we'll get to it. Yes.
I was just going to say, I noticed in it, people are, in Indian families, the emotional platform is that I was just going to say.
Yeah, yeah. No, you'll find India especially, generally the whole of Asia,
yeah.
Then to some degree Africa, even South America, Central America. The only places, and to a lesser degree...
Greeks,
yeah, well, that's what I mean. It's all the Middle East. That's all Asia. I mean, up to Turkey. I think Europe starts...
Italy.
Yeah, basically. When you talk about, it means when you talk, I mean, even you go to the East Bloc, Poland and all those countries, they talk about the West. They consider themselves East, though they are kind of in between. You know, Russia, at least part of Russia. I'd say Russia, especially Western, European Russia, and the East Bloc, down to I guess down to Bulgaria. No, not even, down to Romania. Then they'll kind of like be in between, you know? And then I guess also, yeah, I guess Yugoslavia, I guess the whole way over. Then with Italy, that has some kind of that flavor. But then like you see France, Germany, Holland, Sweden, England, America, Australia. These ones are like your hardcore Western culture. And everybody else is a, you know, varying degrees of softer version of it. You know, a little more personal. Like, you know, South America, you don't talk back to your mother, you know. Otherwise, there's trouble. You know, like that. She'll give you a slap, you know. But in the West, you can take your mother to court, you know. Just because the emotional platforms. Like, you know, America, you say whatever you want about someone's mother, no one cares. But, you know, you say that to, you know, someone from, that's not from, you know, how you say, European stock. And it's a big problem, you know. You know, the blacks or the Hispanics or like that. You say something about your mother and you got something to fight about. Because, you know, because the relationship is there, you know. Like that, they're more personal. Like that. While somehow or another the you know, the really purely white culture somehow has become very impersonal. Very impersonal. Old school is more personal. Yeah, but nowadays, much to my amazement, I thought old school is more broadly widespread. But actually, old schools in many places have been dead for a long time. Like I went to Hungary, and Hungary, there, you have to go back to great-grandparents to find, you know, marriages that worked. Yeah, I mean, they're really a far-out bunch. You know, you say, oh, you know, about your mother, and says, well, there's four of them. Because my father had four wives. And that, well, and your grandparents, well, there's three sets of them, you know, like that. So you have to go back to great-grandparents before you actually have a little bit of kind of reality, like that. You know, so it's just, it's wild.
Also, you know, like people in a Western culture, they seem to be more detached from the family. Is that detachment or aversion?
No, it's not detachment. It's attachment to the senses. So they're more attached to the... See, a family holding together, it only holds together on the emotional platform. Or, as Prabhupada mentions, only as long as the senses are being satisfied. The kid, as long as, you know, all he's into is something good to eat and a bicycle and, you know, a Barbie doll, then it's okay. But as soon as, you know, they're into girls, drugs, you know, fast cars and, you know, free lifestyle, then they don't get that at home, so the family breaks up. Because it's based on the senses. That's why it doesn't work. You understand, like the in the Indian families, why does it break up from the joint families? Because they want more independence. I made more money, I want to buy more things. I don't want to have to share it with the other brothers. Because the old thing was, is it depends upon it, you know, north or south, but there's some central person in the family, like the grandmother. All the brothers go to work, all the money goes into one pool. And then the grandmother spends it. They cook, the women in the house cook, everybody eats, and like that. And they have the same facility.